today I'm here with Tony Bacigalupo, who is pioneering a movement that is just starting to get started in the US. He's doing it in New York. It's not big yet, so Tony's not like a guy that sold a company for $1 billion, but I think he's on the edge of something that has a lot of potential bigger and big, and that is co-working or shared office space, or I don't know the right way to explain it, but Tony's company is co-workspace. So Tony, thanks for joining us, and maybe you can tell us a bit about what you're doing.
Thanks, Adrian. The organization that runs called New Work City, like New York City, but with a W, and it's a co-working space in New York City where entrepreneurs and freelancers get together and do the work, just like a typical workspace, but our space is more of a community-focused workspace. And what I mean by that is that people who come into work here come in with the intention to get their work done, but not just to get their work done, also to interact with the other folks around them and potentially collaborate, find people to work with on projects, and also to make friends and have some social interactions. And it's part of a larger movement of co-working spaces that are popping up in cities all over the world, some of which use the term co-working to describe what they do and some don't. And they really vary in all sorts of shapes and sizes, from small communities of people that just gather in apartments and cafes to more fully-fledged office facilities that have varying levels of community involvement.
What kind of idea?
Well, I was working from home, and I had worked from home for about a year, and initially enjoyed it quite a bit. I really, you know, liked not having to commute and not having to sit in an uninteresting office space. But I found that it was, you know, the home wasn't really an ideal work environment either. And, you know, being by myself all day and, you know, spending all my time in the same room that I sleep in and in the same house that I, you know, eat in and relax in, it wasn't really a natural work environment. And it wasn't really healthy to just be sitting in your house by yourself all day. And so I thought, you know, there has to be a better option, something that isn't a typical office, but isn't your home either. And, you know, so the initial conversation I was having with my parents was, you know, it would be great if there was something like Starbucks, but for people, specifically for people who are working from home. And I did some research and discovered that there was, in fact, already a growing movement for this, and it was called co-working. And it embodied everything that I was looking for. It was a bunch of people who were working from home looking to get out of their homes and work together.
Isn't that ironic? Like, work from home is one of the biggest markets that people sell. So everyone said, quit the job and work from home. Mm. And now you guys are saying, don't work from home, come work in an office.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had the advantage of having gotten a little bit ahead of the curve. This was almost three years ago now that I sought out co-working, which means I'd been working from home for a year before that. And, you know, what I've come to realize over time, after having encountered so many of these folks who are in these similar positions, is that when people talk about wanting to work from home, some of them actually do want to work from home. For some people, working from home works great, especially if you're a parent or, you know, in certain situations, it's a very good thing. But what people, I think, what a lot of people are talking about when they say they want to work from home, what they mean to say is that they want to be able to choose where they work, and they want to be able to work in a circumstance that works best for them. And so, you know, along the way, I've said a lot of things that are sort of anti-cubicle, anti-9-to-5, and I've sort of reined that in a little bit, too, because a lot of people like their cubicles. A lot of people work best when they have to get up and commute and work in an enclosed space. And what I realize is that the thing that we're moving towards in terms of the workplace is to be in a position where each person can choose where they work best, and that, you know, managers, for instance, in larger companies, should be able to offer to their employees multiple options so that they can work best in whatever circumstances, you know, they prefer.
And I talked to one of my friends about this, and I was like, you know, these guys got a cool idea, and it's interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that's running, I don't know, he's got 40-something people full-time spread around the U.S. Mm-hmm. He only hires people in the U.S. they all work from home. He's someone that knows a lot about this. And I've worked from home since 2001, so I thought I knew quite a lot, but he's been teaching me a lot. He's kind of kicking my ass and showing me how much I really know. When I told him about what you were doing, and I was like, you know, this is really great, I want to go and work in that space, he's like, it sounds really distracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so he's a pretty successful business guy,
yep.
And he's not going to want to be in there and have lots of startup coming and pestering him with questions all day.
Yeah, so this is actually a fairly typical, a fairly popular initial reaction to this idea of a co-working space. And in fact, it can be distracting. There are times when it can be difficult to do work here, you know, because there are a lot of people around, they're talking about things. You know, sometimes you can't help but get yourself involved in the conversation that's going on. What we found, though, is that there are a couple of other factors at play here. For one, part of what's nice about a co-working space is that it's entirely optional. So at any time, you can come and go as you please, and most of our membership only comes maybe two days a week or so. And so,
well, they only come 2 days a week. Where are they working the rest of them?
Well, they're working at home, or they're working on site with a client, perhaps, you know, or they're going somewhere else. You know, our membership is extremely mobile. So they'll, you know, some of my members and I work in 3 or 4 different locations in one day. And, you know, it really depends on what the circumstances are, what they need at a given time. And what I found is that for a lot of our members, they need to be able to get out of the house sometimes just to open up their minds a little bit, to be able to, you know, they actually could have trouble concentrating if they're cooped up in their homes for too long of a period of time. So people need to change their pace. You know, some people work better when there's an activity going on around them. And I see a lot of people here who, you know, they put on their headphones and they're working by themselves, but they clearly appreciate having some other people around them and some other opportunities for interaction. And so that's one component of it, is the fact that people can choose what kind of environment they want when they need it, and sometimes co-working works with them. But the other thing is that the distractions that happen here, the things that are going on around you, tend to be of a more productive slant. So when people are talking about stuff here, it tends to be things that are helping us advance our businesses or helping us think up new ideas. And so what you tend to find in a co-working space is that if you come home at the end of the day not having accomplished everything that you set out to accomplish, you might likely find that you've accomplished other things that you never expected to have done that were unexpectedly great and unexpectedly useful for you. And
well, you can. That also can be time-wasting, too. Yeah, I get what you're saying. That balance. But people tend to stay and be happy, do they? Like, how long, when someone joins, do you have a lot of turnover, or do people join and stay, or do they cancel?
We have a pretty wide range of both. I'd say that the average member is probably, you know, probably a member for about 6 months or so. We have, I can tell you from people who have left that the vast majority of people who have left because of circumstantial reasons. They've moved to another state, or they got a different job, something like that.
And you've only been around for a year as well.
That's right. And before that, we were doing co-working, but we were doing it in a cafe. So it was less of a formal workspace and more of an informal gathering.
And how big is what you have now?
So we've got 45 members. And those are folks who are subscribed, who pay a monthly rate. And then we have a wider array of people who come and use the space on an ad hoc basis day to day. And then a much larger community of people who come to our events and support us in other ways.
And so those 45 guys, the cost is like $500 a month, right?
So yeah, the highest level of service is $500 a month, and that's for a full-time desk.
Mm-hmm.
But it varies anywhere from $25 a day. And then the most popular memberships are in the middle of $150 and $200 a month, and that gets you 2 or 3 days a week. And that's sort of the sweet spot for most of these folks.
So, I mean, how much can you customize stuff for a guy like me? Like, I have my big 30-inch monitor, and mm-hmm. I like drink tea during the day. How does that sort of stuff work?
Well, that's what's really kind of nice about this being a very down-to-earth community sort of driven effort. We're completely flexible. As long as you're not interfering with the folks next to you, you know, if you're a full-time member, you can claim desk, and if you want to put your monitor on there, if you want to put anything else on there, it's fine with us as long as you're not a huge slob, you know. And, you know, in terms of tea or any other needs, you know, you're welcome to bring whatever you like, and as long as you don't mind sharing it or, you know, keeping it tucked away somewhere.
Oh, so everybody goes through everybody's stuff.
Well, it depends. You know, I mean, if you want to make it publicly available, then you can do so. And if you don't, then you just gotta, you know, find a spot to stick it where people will understand that it's not for public consumption.
So what about, like, for example, I have a filing cabinet. Where do you put your filing cabinet?
Mm-hmm. So most of the folks here don't need to store papers or anything to that effect. We have lockers, which are available to full-timers. So we haven't had too many people who really needed file storage of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who have needed some kind of storage, we've been able to accommodate them.
And so maybe is that the sort of stuff, then you keep maybe your filing cabinet at home, you keep your books at home, and you have your desk and you have a monitor, if you're going to use it full-time like that, then you put it up, set up with a desk and a monitor, and keep a couple of things tucked away that you don't want people to take, and then that becomes your workspace.
Right, there are two basic models. There's most people just come in with a laptop, and they set up and break down, and they leave, and it's all contained. And then the other model is basically someone leaves an external monitor here, you know, dedicated keyboard, maybe a dock of some kind, and then when they come in, they drop their laptop into their station, and they're ready to go.
Hmm. So what kind of internet do you have?
We've got a high-speed DSL connection. It's 5 megabit up and down.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's been real tricky getting killer internet connections here. One of the things that we're working on is we've already got quotes on higher-speed 100 megabit connections, but we can't justify it yet with the size of our space. Right now, our space is the whole space is about 1,500 square feet. So when we move to a larger space next year, we're going to grind up that internet. But it seems to be everyone here is pretty happy with the speed that we got now.
And do you have Wi-Fi in there as well?
Yes.
So people can come in, they can plug in their Wi-Fi, plug in their Ethernet, and then they're off.
There you go.
How are distractions? I mean, let's say you had some guy that was fairly well known that came in. Like, let's say Jason Fried from 37 Signals, that suddenly wanted to work in your space.
Right.
Is he going to be bothered all day?
Well, you know, there's one of the things that happens with this kind of space is that it's sort of self-enforcing. So if someone's going to be annoying, is going to become apparent very quickly. And people here will sort of manage it amongst themselves. And, you know, I'm obviously here to make sure things don't get out of hand, but people respect each other. You know, if someone's sitting there working and, you know, they've got their headphones on and they're, you know, they're obviously busy, they can make it apparent that, you know, they don't want to be bothered right now. And we've talked about dividing systems. We've used some in the past where you have, you know, sort of like in a Brazilian steakhouse where you have, you know, a green light, red light sort of thing to let people know whether or not you're busy. One of the co-working spaces in Los Angeles, Blank Spaces, produces some great little commercials, and one of the ones they've done recently had to do with exactly this, where they had sort of a little instructional video that says, you know, when I'm not wearing headphones, you're free to talk to me. When I'm wearing one headphone, it means, you know, you can talk, but keep it clear, and if I'm wearing two headphones, it means leave me the hell alone. And it was a pretty funny commercial, and anybody who works in the co-working space could appreciate it.
Hmm. What about phone calls?
Yeah, so phone calls is an interesting challenge, particularly for us because we're a pretty small space. We've only got one private room for our members. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, essentially, people will use the private room for phone calls as a primary option. And then if that's taken, then either they'll find a corner of the space where they can talk on the phone and not bother too many people, or they'll keep their voice down. Or what a lot of people do is, for phone calls where they don't really need to be in front of their machine, they'll take a walk, though. They'll be in the hallway or they'll be in a different part of the space. But it's definitely a trade-off. One of the things we want to do in our next space is make sure that we have ample number of small private rooms for people to either be on phone calls or have two- or three-person conversations. But essentially, you know, it's our biggest challenge in the space that we've got, but people seem to be reasonably okay with it, in part because that's one of the things that people who come to my space are looking for is a more they're willing to trade off a little bit of privacy and a little bit of silence in exchange for a more open, more social environment. And that's sort of why we exist in the first place, because all of the other options that had existed previously offered nothing but private workspace, and people were looking for an alternative to that.
Hmm. It's interesting about people coming only 2 days a week. So do they feel better? They want to work from home part of the time and then have some more social interaction part of the time during the week?
Yeah. You know, a lot of folks come in when they want to work with their business partners or with, you know, folks that they work with on their team. So they might likely schedule some times where, you know, they'll plan to work from home on certain days, or they'll work wherever they want to work certain days. But then they say, okay, you know, we want to work together, we'll work in New York City, and we'll meet there, you know, every Tuesday and Thursday or whatever it is. So a lot of folks that are here on those 2 or 3 day a week plans are here in pairs or in trios, or, you know, or occasionally do that.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm interested that you've kind of referred to this almost like it's a social movement rather than a business.
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting thing because these are sort of the waters that I'm beginning to work on now.
So which way do you like to go? Are you going to be Craigslist or are you going to be eBay or are you?
Well, I'm really intrigued by the world of social enterprise. I think that what we're doing here is very much part of this growing world of businesses that want to make a profit, but also have, you know, social causes in mind, social goals in mind for their organization. Co-working spaces in general, you know, there are a lot of them and all over the world, and most of them have been started by folks who have had not entrepreneurial ambitions, at least directly from the co-working space itself, and more social ambitions, more, you know, they wanted to cultivate the community, they wanted to have space for their own needs and share that with other people. There have been a lot of spaces that have started underneath a design firm or an agency where there are obvious benefits to having other freelancers and potential jobs physically located in your office, so it's a sort of a way to generate leads. But one of the things that we're trying to navigate now in several of our co-working spaces is figuring out where to go from here, because we've started these spaces and are pretty well sustainable into themselves, but they're not necessarily in their current form businesses that are going to grow into massive or even reasonably large businesses in the current form. And for a lot of people, that's fine, because they're doing this as a side project, or they're doing this to complement their existing business. One of the things that I'm working on is turning this into something that that could be my primary, you know, full-time business. And that takes a lot of different forms, and I don't think it's just purely the co-working space at that point.
Mm. So you potentially want to scale this into something that you can go and like build co-working spaces all across. I mean, you become like Starbucks. Is that one potential thought?
Well, it's hard to really see where what kind of role I'd want to play in something like that. You know, one of the things that makes co-working spaces as cool as they are is that they're very local. They're very rooted in their existing communities. So it's not something. And again, I'm talking about the
kind of people have said that about Starbucks and about coffee houses, and then Starbucks come along and commoditize it.
Yeah, and it's
But here's the other thing I'm thinking about as you're telling me all of this is that there's a lot of guys who have teams that they have working for them all around the country that would probably love to be able to sign up for a nationwide membership or something like this and say, okay, each person I'm going to pay $250 a month and that'll give them access to office space in any city in the U.S. for up to 2 or 3 days a week.
Sure.
And there's a network of all these spaces that they can go and use.
Sure. Well, and one fact, we can, you know, the infrastructure exists for what you're basically describing in form of things like Regis, which offers sort of these executive office suites. And that being said, I think there is a growing opportunity for something similar to what we're doing in co-working spaces on a larger scale, perhaps for larger organizations that want to place people, you know, in multiple cities, that sort of thing. I think there is an opportunity there. Whether or not, you know, that's something, that's a direction that I'd like to go is something that I'm evaluating. Because while we're learning how to make a model that works, we're sort of proving the concept. Taking it to that scale is a very different business and very interesting business. It's just a matter of, you know, what kind of role I'd like to play and what kind of direction I'd like to take things. Because the other thing is that there are a lot of other directions that you can go if you start with the foundation of a thriving co-working space. There are a lot of people here who are starting businesses together, and there's a lot of innovation aspects that are going on there. There's some educational components as well. And so part of what we do in New York City is we want to help make it easier for people to lead independent lives. And so there are different components to that, and you know, a few different directions we can go, and that's sort of what we're working on now is determining where we want to direct our efforts.
And what are you interested in helping launch that from us, essentially?
Well, we already are sort of, I want to say by accident, but just by existing. When someone comes in and they're new to the space and they tell me they're working on something, you know, they're interested in something, I'll see to it that they're introduced to the other people in the community that are working on similar things. And I've lost count of how many times I walked into the space and found people who I know had previously never known each other all of a sudden working together on a project. And so there's definitely, co-working spaces are definitely helping to facilitate the growth and the existence of, you know, entrepreneurial efforts of one form or another. And I think there are a lot of different things that can be done to help facilitate that even more actively.
I mean, do you want to actually help incubate and, I mean, do you want to be an angel investor? Is that what you're looking to do?
I don't know about angel investments. I think that there are opportunities there, certainly for helping with financing for the, you know, for people who are getting started. So it's something that's certainly out there. We just have to figure out the right way to approach it. One of the things we're talking about doing is like a mentorship program where perhaps we get some external help and we get folks who are perhaps have demonstrated some interest and some passion for starting something, but maybe don't have the proper resources to get started or are coming from, you know, perhaps an underprivileged background or if they're young, and pairing them up with experienced folks who can sort of show them ropes and help them get started and along the way work with one another. So there are a couple of, you know, like I said, educational components there as well.
I can probably help you with the innovators.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, you know, we're really interested in education and particularly, you know, students either in high school or college who have entrepreneurial inclinations, but maybe aren't finding, any particular infrastructure or resources to actually, you know, get thrown into the water, you know, so to speak, and get their hands dirty and really learn how to run businesses themselves. And I think there's no better way for someone to learn how to work for themselves than to try it out and certainly to be in an environment around other people who have been doing it all the time. It's remarkable. I mean, the quality of the people that are here, they're all just very experienced, independent folks, and they all know how to run their own businesses and figure out how to, you know, make a living on their own. And so they're very inspiring people, and they have a lot to offer in terms of, you know, learning how to follow in their footsteps.
Have you had any guys that have started businesses in your space and then gone off and raised money and got offices and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's funny. We actually had more of those right before we opened. We had some people who were involved. And it took us a while to get our dedicated space up and running. So we had a bunch of people who were sort of on board early on who sort of outgrew us before they had a chance to actually sign up into the space. But we have a couple of folks who have sort of, you know, restructured things and moved on and outgrown the space. But not in as obvious a way as, you know, hey, that startup in the corner just got funding. Let's have a party for them, you know, wish them well, and they moved on. We haven't really seen that yet. Although there's probably one or two companies here now that I'd say that's going to happen. Actually, a couple of folks at CodeTweet, the Twitter company, worked here for a little while, and they obviously moved on to San Francisco. So, you know, it takes a lot of different shapes and sizes.
I've had a bunch of guys who have been successful I've talked to in the New York area. Mm-hmm. They've got their cash, and they've mentioned to me, like, hey, do you know of any companies to invest in?
Mm-hmm.
You're clearly the guy with your ears to the ground that knows what's out there.
Yeah, and, you know, not all of our members are working on things that, you know, that would entail investment. A lot of them are doing contract-type stuff. But there are a lot of people who are working on great little startups. Some people are working on multiple things and building, you know, little products, one thing at a time here. But people are always building something new and interesting. And you know, yeah, there's certain stuff that, you know, people are looking for money, and I'd love to hook them up with people who'd like to invest in them.
So back to just the question, I'm just trying to understand. I know you don't have it completely clear of being either a social movement or a business.
Sure.
I mean, do you see this? Do you just not have an end yet, and you're just trying to find your way forward?
Well, yeah, that's honestly where it's at, but I think, you know, again, I think it can be both. I think it can be a business which, you know, which is built upon a social movement. And, you know, that's what I'd really like to aim for, is to strike a sweet spot there. Co-working in general, right? People talk about co-working as a social movement, and that is pretty much just a social movement. That's just a concept that people subscribe to, and, you know, they either build businesses or they build communities off of that. New York City, the organization I run, is very much a business that was built out of that community that we built. We had a community before we had a business, and that's one of the reasons that that it works so well for us. But I'd like to see this grow and become a business that can employ the people that are passionate about helping to grow the organization so that they can work on it all the time. And, you know, I know that the more time that these folks can dedicate to New York City and growing the community, the more positive impact we're going to be able to create for our members and for our city. And that's really where I'd like to see us go, is to be able to just create as much positive impact as possible and, you know, help as many people as we can.
I mean, could I ask, and I guess, so I would just ask, it feels a little bit like you have something that's good and easy, and that you may be overcomplicating it. I mean, aren't there some basic things that people need? They need quiet space, good fast internet, Wi-Fi, desks that are okay, some places to do phone calls, a system for check-in and check-out.
Right.
I mean, with those, and then I'm sure there's a couple more things beyond that, but those are sort of the basics. Is that not then something that you could just go and start scaling Starbucks-wise all around the country?
Well, perhaps.
You pick a new city. Let's say you want to launch in Baltimore. So
right.
You want to launch the co-work space. Baltimore, you know, mm-hmm. you get a national name for it. You do a bunch of direct marketing flyers and online advertising and stuff to get, because you might know that you need, like you said, you have 45 people. So you need 45 people, or you might need 30 people to make a space break even, and then 45 to make a profit.
Right.
So you're going to do the marketing, you get the sign-ups, and then as soon as you've got that, then that's, you know, you might know it takes a month to fill a new space.
Right.
So you can just do that and expand around the country, like Walmart, Deal, Starbucks, or anyone else. I mean, is there something I'm missing with that? I'm sure there are many things. Maybe you can find me.
Well, so what you're describing, I wouldn't suggest that it's a bad idea, but what I would say is that what's missing from it is sort of the secret sauce that makes co-working spaces, that attracts people to co-working spaces over places like Regis and some of the more cut-and-dry office suites. And it's the fact that it's rooted in an existing community that had an existing set of needs. So before I opened the space, I went and got to know everybody I could in the community, and we started doing co-working wherever we could, in apartments and basements, wherever it was. And along the way, you know, I determined, it became clear that there was a critical mass of people that needed something, you know, reasonably specific, and it wasn't something that I imposed upon them. It was something that they were collectively helping me shape. And so the issue with something like going to Baltimore, opening up a space, and then flyering the area, is that you don't have any existing community infrastructure to build upon. And you can certainly work on building that community infrastructure before opening a space, but it has to be done in such a way that is
What if you had a design co-work space, and then you had a client co-work space, and that sort of stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's where things are going to start going. Because, you know, again, we're talking about something that's very early on here, and so all the co-working spaces we have, you know, among all of them, none of them is really more than 3 years old or so, in terms of places that are self-declared co-working spaces. And so I think that, you know, you sort of alluded to, I think this is something that's going to continue to grow. We're going to see a lot more people working in co-working-like situations in the future. And maybe where co-working won't even be used, but these sort of community, flexible workspaces. And, you know, they're going to take different shapes and sizes. People who are designers are going to have very different needs from, you know, lawyers and business people and people in all sorts of different industries. And so while right now there's, you know, maybe only one or two or three co-working spaces in any given city, there are all sort of general-purpose co-working spaces that appeal to, you know, anybody who can just work on a laptop for the most part.
That's off right now, but that's becoming everybody.
That's true. So, you know, like maybe there's going to be sort of the sweet spot of, you know, spaces that more or less just appeal to folks who are on their laptops for the most part, and then there might be, you know, more specific, more differentiated, niche kinds of workspaces that appeal to a certain demographic. And there are already sort of derivative kinds of places. There are hardware hacker spaces in New York. There's NYC Resistor, Alpha One Labs. Basically, you know, hands-on workspaces where people are actually building things by hand. And there are writers' rooms where people, you know, it's specifically for folks who are writing. And so they have a much more strict strictly quiet environment. There's a space in New York called In Good Company that's only for female entrepreneurs, and they have some, you know, associated mentorship and education programs associated with that. So, you know, you're getting all sorts of different shapes and sizes. And Houston Crayons in San Francisco is a great example. It's a co-working space with an attached daycare center. So it's for, you know, parents who work from home who also have kids to take care of. And that's been wildly successful. And they've expanded to 2 or 3 locations now.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems to me to be the kind of thing, it's the quiet before the storm. And something's going to happen and it's going to blow up. It just seems to me to make some sense.
I completely agree. And, you know, and I think that there's, you know, you can see the trends happening in the workplace. You know, more and more companies are moving away from the traditional models. And if you look at some of the larger companies, so many of the really large companies have got very, you know, very unusual looking models. You know, IBM and Intel and a lot of these businesses, Sun, where you can just, you know, if you're an employee, most of the employees can pretty much just check in, you know, to one of the locations in any city at any time and just drop into a spot. And it's very, very flexible, very mobile.
How do you compete against others? I mean, there are obviously other groups like yours in New York. How do you compete against them? I mean, how do you avoid becoming a commodity?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that still, I think, very nascent. There aren't a lot of other groups in New York that are doing what we're doing. Very few. And, you know, the way that it becomes not a commodity is that it becomes an organic thing. It springs out of a need from a critical mass of people who have found each other. And that's one of the reasons that what we're doing at New York City in its current form is not something that's readily replicable across different cities and across different places. So, you know, I'm not worried about another co-working space opening up so much because I already have a critical group of people that have a sense of personal ownership in the organization that we've built together over this time.
Well, the problem with that is that it's not scalable. But I guess if you can find a way to scale that concept, then you've got something.
Well, right. I mean, it's not necessarily something I ever intended to scale. You know, and that's part of what it is, too, is that, you know, Newark City, even in its name, you know, has this implication of being something that exists to support, you know, a group of people in New York City. And so, you know, part of its goal is to grow here in New York, but to stay here in New York and to be something that supports New York's entrepreneurial economy.
You just wanted to find a family. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, that's part of it, too. I mean, the first day I went co-working, I showed up at some guy's apartment that I'd never met before, and I was introduced to 20 or so of the most, you know, wonderful, bright, inspiring, exciting people, you know, who were all just working on great things. And I left at the end of the day having already built a website with someone I'd met that day, and I said, you know, I want to spend as much time as I can on these kinds of folks. And now I do. Now I'm here every day, and I'm working alongside some of the most incredible, inspiring people. And that's a big part of it. You know, and working alongside those kinds of people, nothing but good can come from it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that very much so. You've mentioned a couple of times Regis. I'm not familiar with them. Maybe could you explain who they are and how they're different to what you do?
Sure. So Regis is basically a company that offers executive office suites, and they have a massive network. They're all over the world. They're in dozens of countries. Within major cities, they may have, you know, a dozen locations. They may have a large number of locations. And they offer plans that will allow you to work in any of their spaces around the world. And so part of this is that they make deals with corporate entities so that their employees can use these spaces when they're going on business trips and things like that. So I've talked to people who say that they have Regis memberships that they never use. It's just part of the job that they have it offered to them. And the way it's different is basically in a way that's rooted. You know, co-working spaces are very much rooted in the concept of community and people getting to know each other and for you to not be a stranger with the person you're sitting next to. And Regis sort of is the opposite. It's offering you the resources of an office, but not necessarily giving you any...
Not the community, right?
Right. I mean,
they've taken what I described as scale. But when you say executive, like a lot of people working from home aren't executives. I mean, I'd like to be able to put people in co-working spaces that are making $2,000 a month.
Well, you mean with the people that are making $2,000 a month?
Yeah, I mean, I have freelancers and various people. I'd like to be able to... the cost structure, I'd like that to work enough so that you could, at that salary level, it would make sense to put them in a co-working space. And
sure.
I imagine what you're describing with Regis, it wouldn't fit that.
So one of the things I've used to describe in the past to make it better to understand this is the idea of a spectrum, and this sort of the co-working spectrum, the spectrum being all the different kinds of people who might need something that resembles co-working.
Mm-hmm.
And on one end of the spectrum is a person who maybe doesn't have any kind of budget for any kind of space. They're a telecommuter or they're a freelancer, and they mostly like working from home. And so for them, maybe just going to a Starbucks or going to a cafe on occasion works fine, or going to one of these free co-working things called Jelly that happens every once in a while. And then on the extreme other end of the spectrum is a small business, maybe a startup, 5 or 6 or so people that is maybe not big enough to have their own space, but doesn't necessarily, you know, want to work from their homes either. And so they have this need to be in a workspace, and maybe even a more specific need to work around other similar businesses. And then in between is where co-working is arising. And so the executive office suites and the places where you rent cubicles and you rent small rooms all sort of fall on the higher end of that spectrum. And then, you know, Starbucks and the cafes and things like that fall on the other end. And then in the middle, in that interim area, where you have maybe an individual or maybe a small group of people that have outgrown their living room but don't really want to be in cubicles and don't really want to have their own office space, that's sort of the middle ground where co-working is starting to arise. And so for the, you know, $2,000 employee that you're describing, you know, they probably wouldn't fit in well with the Regis, and, you know, the budget probably wouldn't work out for it either. And so they might be someone who's an ideal candidate for a co-working space.
What does the Regis cost a month?
I don't know. It varies a lot because there's so many different locations.
I mean, would it typically be like $1,000 a month?
I think it is. I think it's, I honestly don't know. I wouldn't want to say something I don't know. So, but my understanding is that the general cost is higher than, you know, than a roughly equivalent thing for co-working space.
And what they're providing there is more formal business work environment, quiet. You can make phone calls, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Right. Cool. We've talked about a lot of stuff. Is there anything that you want to talk about which we haven't covered?
Well, I mean, you know, we touched on the, you know, the sort of this notion of, excuse me, of it being a social movement versus business, and, you know, it's interesting territory for me because it's exactly the kind of, you know, what I want to explore. I want to, you know, we talked a little bit before the interview, we were talking a little bit about this generational component, and I'm a millennial, and one of the things that people are saying about millennials is that they have this inclination towards doing things that that better the world. And, you know, there's this very, you know, social, you know, altruistic, maybe altruistic is not the right word, but you know what I'm trying to describe, components of what people want to do. And there's some studies that have said that you know, younger folks would actually take significant pay cuts to work for an organization that they believed was doing a social good over, you know, a company that they didn't. And so I think that there's a growing trend there among people in my generation.
Is that a growing trend, or you just think that's as people get older, they want to make more money? If you're in your 20s, if you don't have, I can't remember, something with your, you think with your heart when you're in your 20s, and then you think with your head when you're in your 40s. I forget.
There's obviously the common phrase, you're young and idealistic, right? I mean, if you're in your, yeah, in your 20s, you know, you want to change the world and so on and so forth. But from what I've read, my understanding from what I've read is that that our generation is particularly and distinctly focus on this sort of thing, and perhaps as a consequence of being raised by baby boomers who had their own culture, you know, people in between maybe were more focused on personal self-accomplishment and advancing themselves and, you know, making lots of money. I think my generation is being a little more characterized by its desire to make a difference. And, you know, I don't have the benefit of perspective, but I can tell you, you know, based on everything I've felt to date, that, you know, I have very little interest in just, you know, making money and finding success for the sake of money and success. I'd much rather, you know, continue to do what I've done, which is sacrifice financial income for the sake of doing something that's more meaningful and more satisfying. And, you know, maybe that's a more challenging route towards figuring out how to continue to do that and to start, you know, making, you know, more money and significantly larger amounts of money. But I think that's a great challenge to be working on, something I don't mind putting in a whole lot of effort to figure out.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we'd better wrap it up there because we're pretty much out of time. So, Tony, thanks very much for doing the interview.
Good. Thank you so much, Adrian.